Isn't this a sports show?
I'm self-serving.
Yes, you definitely are.
Almost entirely.
There are more pieces of evidence of that than that the dinosaurs ever existed. We have more sound clips of eating self-promoting than we have fossils in the fossil record.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We have more evidence of me being self-serving than we have that the moon landing was a real thing. Like, we know that I'm self-serving.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
I play enough fantasy football. I've been playing fantasy football for coming up on 10 years, which is completely bleeping bonkers. I've barely been potty trained for 10 years.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
I'm dope. Quit listening. Unfollow me on Twitter.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Sometimes the news fairies just, they fly down from heaven just in time for a show. It's really wonderful. I really appreciate it a lot. Thank you, news fairies. Thank you. The Chiefs play on Monday night, so we don't really have like a full game preview on a Red Friday here. No. We've got kind of just a normal show. The Chiefs game is still a few days away. One full business day away. So then what do we do? Oh, well, the Royals prevented Dayton Moore. David Glass prevented Dayton Moore from interviewing with the Atlanta Braves. That's interesting. Joe Flacco got concussed last night in a controversial hit that I feel like I have an unpopular opinion on. That's interesting.
Let me just get my pitchfork.
And also Bob McNair called his players inmates. Now, listen, the phrasing isn't as big of a deal as the sentiment. We'll talk about all of it. But it's just nice of everybody to bring out some news here. Also, 5 o'clock on a Friday is a really good time for news dumps. So the second hour of the show every Friday has a chance for, like, us to find out that JFK was killed by an alien. Like, if there's a time that we're going to find that out, which is Beards' theory, by the way.
I called it.
Former
it's
history.
Mine.
Former history
it
major.
It belongs to me, and what it is, too. It is my theory. I call it theory number one.
Beards.
I totally didn't steal that from Monty Python, by the way.
Good. Beards, a strange distance away from the microphone, has dibs on JFK was killed by aliens. But I digress. Bob McNair, the owner of the Houston Texans, was reported to have said during some of the owners' meetings as they all work on this nasty anthem business, was reported to say that they can't have the inmates running the prison whenever he was discussing how the NFL has to sort of squash these social issue protests that have been happening before NFL games. And today, the things that have happened in Houston have made the story even more interesting. And I want to make sure that I want to try to treat this fairly, where I can represent those of you who really don't think this is a big deal or who are annoyed. That this is a conversation that we're even having. I'm going to try to represent you fairly. My Twitter mentions has a couple of you. I'm going to represent all of that fairly. I'll do my best. But there are implications to what Bob McNair said that I think have to be understood and included in the conversation. And then we can move on to what I think is the most interesting thing, which is what happens next. But he says inmates running the prison, can't have the inmates running the prison. And I tweeted about it, and the first response I got was, why is this phrase offensive all of a sudden? This long-used phrase, why is it offensive now in October 2017? And the phrasing is bad, but it's not the thing. It's not the most important thing here for me. For me, it's all about the surrounding context of this story and of this issue. The sentiment and the context are more important than the phrasing here. You got an owner of an NFL team in a league where the NFL is just about 70% black, talking about this issue of protests that are directly about racial injustice. It's a very black league and a very black issue. White owner calling players the inmates at the prison. And I guess calling his own team the prison? The organization the prison? It's got to at least make you go, eh, yeah, that's not great. And that's really, that's, I think that's as high as I'm raising my pitchfork on this issue as far as the phrasing. Is, ooh, bad phrasing, bad sentiment, you don't realize what you're saying or the situation that you're in. That's as high as I'm raising the pitchfork on the phrasing of it.
Just that oblivious blurting. Blip, blip, blip. See,
go ahead, try that again.
The oblivious blurting out of the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. And not having the presence of mind to just put that differently. But again, I'm not out here with a pitchfork for what phrase he used. But I completely understand why, as an employee of the Houston Texans, you would have a really hard time going out there on Sunday and playing to make money for this person who clearly doesn't seem to have a very good perspective on your worth and your value.
Do you think they'll do something?
They're going to do something, and we're going to get to that.
Okay.
I feel like I have to set it up before we can get to what happens next.
Okay.
But something will happen. So it's not about the phrase for me particularly. It's about a public hearing of an expression of a sentiment that's a pretty crummy way to treat and talk about and think about your employees. If you, whoever you are, heard your boss call you an inmate in the context of a conversation they're having about how you cannot be allowed to have any power in this organization, I think that would make you feel bad. It would make me feel bad. I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like if I found out that my employer thought of me as an inmate, or even that they thought of me as something lesser. I understand wholly, fully well that the employers make the rules. I totally get it. I really do. But I don't think any employee wants to feel like a lesser value of a person than their employer. It just doesn't feel good. So reacting to that does not bother me one bit. Now, what's weird to me is how many employees of all sorts of different companies or whatever, it's weird to me how many employees seem to instinctively jump over and side with the owners on issues like this. Somebody on Twitter said, yeah, making millions must be a tough life. And it's always kind of strange to me that it gets back to there. I guess it's not strange, it just kind of feels like missing the point. And I guess maybe it's a jealousy thing. Because, you know, these guys are making millions of dollars, and I'm making some hourly wage. I don't want to hear about the millionaire's problems. But, like, this is a conversation they had on Levitard last year at some point. Like, you think Brock Osweiler had a bad year last year, like, emotionally? He couldn't get on the field. He was getting beaten around. He was making a ton of money. But do you think he had a good year last year? Do you think he was happy last year? I don't. Is it better to be rich and sad than poor and sad? Sure. I would imagine so. But it's just kind of weird to me that so many employed people, which includes myself, for the record, side with employers on issues here. Because if you're an employee anywhere, I think that you would empathize with other employees. But if they make a lot of money, then the empathy dissipates. Also, for what it's worth, the discrepancy between Bob McNair and DeAndre Hopkins and your boss and you, that ratio is probably pretty reasonable. It's probably pretty close. Owners are making tons of money from tons of places. DeAndre Hopkins is just getting fairly compensated for his job. And that does not make him impervious to feeling like his employer sees him as a lesser human being. I understand that that doesn't feel great if you're an employee. And we might dive into the Twitter mentions a little bit. But the back and forth is... It's kind of exhausting because I don't really want to fight about it all that much. Because I want to give some understanding to the perspective that it doesn't make sense that people living paycheck to paycheck don't feel overly sensitive to a man making more to play for a game in 1 year than he'll make in a lifetime. I don't have that problem personally. I don't think that having money makes you impervious to being slighted by your employer. I don't make tons of money, and I don't have a problem acknowledging the human emotions of people that do. And also, something else that someone else brought up on Twitter, Jason brought up on Twitter, said smart employers listen to their employees. And I think that NFL owners are probably trying to do that now with these owner and player meetings and everything. You know, Kaepernick's apparently invited to the next round of them. But healthy organizations have good communication and mutual respect. That seems like the most obvious thing in the world. Like, just simply being heard in an environment, in any professional environment, is so valuable. And I've had, and you're going to have to allow me to make college a professional-ish setting for this, but I've even gotten to have some time on both sides of that transaction. So I was the editor of my university's newspaper. So I had in a you know, if you're going to literally run out this hierarchy, had section editors that, you know, would report to me or whatever, and I was accountable to that, and then the reporters would report up also, and you've got, you know, your promotions people, your marketing people, all of that, which left me responsible for, you know, the grand direction of everything. And I learned a lot in that time about how you work with people who you are, like, in some way responsible for. I've spent every other instance of my life being an employee of something, of someone else, of some other organization. And I've learned from both sides of that transaction that simply having... If you are in charge of something, if you're atop a hierarchy somewhere, it's not that hard to think of the people around you, and I guess from a hierarchical standpoint, below you, I put that in air quotes, as also human beings. And it's especially noticeable whenever you are one of the employed. So I just want to feel like a human being. I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's absurd. And the value of simply being thought of as an equal to a person that pays your paychecks, I think is worthwhile. Anyway, so today, this story... That's almost more time than I wanted to spend on my logic behind all of it, but whatever. For me, the story is especially interesting because of what happened after this came out and what's going to happen this weekend. The main thing is that DeAndre Hopkins was absent from practice today because of Bob McNair's comments. We haven't heard from DeAndre Hopkins yet, but that's the report that's come out.
Well, I think the original thing was just he took a personal day.
That's what they said originally. It's Schefter's reported since that it was because of McNair.
Oh, it's a personal day because of this.
Right. Schefter also reported that many of the Texans players wanted to leave the facility and not attend practice, and Pro Bowl receiver DeAndre Hopkins actually did. Bill O'Brien, Rick Smith, the general manager, and assistant head coach Romeo Crennel then led a 90-minute team meeting in which players were given a platform to speak out. The expectation now is all Texans, including Hopkins, will be with the team on Saturday when it is scheduled to leave for Seattle, but we'll see. Also, Dwayne Brown said, when it happened, there's a thousand emotions going through your mind. Obviously, one of the emotions is to leave the building immediately, but we decided to go to work. The situation's not over. It's something that we'll reconvene and talk about again, but we had practice today. then Sarah Barshop. Barshop? It's spelled Barshop, so I'm going to say that. That's her name. Sarah Barshop reported, the Texans will do something before Sunday's game in Seattle, but the team has not decided yet what that will be. And I think this is going to be fascinating. Now, please, wherever you're at on this issue, which I feel like isn't really a two-sided issue, I think you just go, oh, yeah, the owner said a bad thing, and employees are hurt by how their employer views them. Because, again, I think you would, too. I worked at Chick-fil-A for a year and a half. I never enjoyed the fact that I knew how replaceable I was. That was no good. I don't think anybody likes feeling replaceable. In a professional environment, in a personal environment, no one likes feeling replaceable. But sometimes you are. Anyway. I don't really think it's a two-sided issue. I think people like to feel valued and not replaceable. And not like inmates who cannot be allowed to have any power or any say, regardless. Whatever happens before this game on Sunday is going to be fascinating. Some other Texan tweeted that maybe it was a former Texan, I actually should get my facts straight on that one. But said that this is not the only, he doesn't think this is the only owner that feels and speaks this way. I would buy that 100%. So maybe this spreads beyond the Texans. I don't know. But whatever happens before Sunday's game in Seattle, also against the Seahawks, who are the NFL's wokest team, is going to be fascinating. Because it's not going to be about racial injustice or the president. It's going to be, whatever they do, is going to be about their employer. And that's going to be pretty dang interesting. That's not something that you get to see very often. A team of 50-some guys potentially taking a stance to say, hey, employer, we're worth more than you think we are.
Just imagine if this was a home game.
It would be probably crazier. Being in Seattle is like the second best place it could be.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be interesting. And also, some of those guys are replaceable. The fourth corner on that team is replaceable. DeAndre Hopkins is not. Dwayne Brown is not. Deshaun Watson is not. J.J. Watt and Whitney Merciless are out already, obviously. But I just think it's really, really interesting. And I'm not even talking about the fact that talking about a 70% black league as inmates is racially coded. I'm just leaving that out to the side. Because I don't want to fight with you on it. Some of you get real aggressive with that. I'm saying just from a simple human perspective. Now the stuff about, you know, racially coded language and everything is totally reasonable to read into. I'm just not making you do that right now. Somebody said, you know, we're talking about a kids game with billionaires and millionaires. Actually have all kinds of rule input changes because of player input. Stuff like that's collectively bargained. There are gives and takes for changing things. Because there is a conversation between a couple people in my mentions about giving employers your suggestions. And someone responded that the NFL owners aren't really here for taking suggestions. And that is true. They are not. There's not a suggestion box in the locker room that I've ever seen.
It's shaped like a football helmet.
And inside of it is just a fire.
I was going to say a shredder.
Oh, that's good also. Yeah. That would be a pretty good visual, just to get a shredder and then to put a sign on the side that just says a suggestion box. That's pretty funny. I'm sure that's been done before.
It's still funny, though.
It is still funny. Also, again, like, NFL players are fairly compensated for their work. In fact, if anything, they're undercompensated because it's not a free market. It's a salary-capped sport. By the way, do you guys know? Here's a suggestion I'm sure the players would give. Uncap the sport. The reason that the NFL is salary-capped is because the owners want it to be. Because if it's not, the NFL gets more expensive to be a player and not to be a player, to be a contender in. That's all. I think that's all. I just think it's a really interesting story, and I'm really interested to see what's going to happen on Sunday with whatever the Texans do. And also see if any other teams follow suit in any way whatsoever. Because this is not an external pressure on the NFL. This is now an internal pressure. This isn't Donald Trump. This isn't unjust police killings. This isn't a social issue outside of the organization of the league. This is within a single NFL organization. It's going to be fascinating. Whenever we come back, I want to talk about that hit that Joe Flacco took last night. We won't spend like a whole segment on it, but it's one of the most interesting things that happened in the last 24 hours. And I think I'm dealing with a pretty unpopular opinion on this issue. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Cover charge, please. Plebeians, for maybe. Not me.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Excuse me. I'm talent. I'm talent, sir. Unhand me.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Let's shift tones for a second, huh? I think there's a lot of yelling going on, a lot of accidental lecturing. CNN.com headline, this mystery object may be the first visitor, our first visitor, from another solar system. No, thank you, CNN autoplay video. Don't need you. I'm just going to read the story. Astronomers around the world are trying to track down a small, fast-moving object that is zipping through our solar system. Is it a comet? An asteroid? NASA's not sure. The space agency doesn't even know where it came from, but it's not behaving like the local space rocks, and that means it may not be from our solar system. If that's confirmed, NASA says, it would be the first interstellar object to be observed and confirmed by astronomers. We've been waiting for this day for decades, manager of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies said in a NASA news release. His name is Paul Chaudis? I don't know. It's long been theorized that such objects exist, asteroids or comets moving around between the stars and occasionally passing through our solar system, but this is the first such detection. So far, everything indicates this is likely an interstellar object, but more data would help confirm it. They're currently working on getting more information. Its motion could not be explained using either a normal solar system asteroid or a comet orbit, he said. This object came from outside our solar system. Then there's a sentence here from the CNN article that I take particular issue with. Whatever it is, the object isn't a threat to Earth. How do you know that?
Did they ask it?
It's moving in a way that we've never seen an object move before. And you are confident that it is no threat to Earth. Really? This is the most extreme orbit I've ever seen, said David Farnocchia, a scientist at the Center for Near-Earth Object Studies. It's going extremely fast and on such a trajectory that we can say with confidence this object is on its way out of the solar system and not coming back. You say that. But we don't know. Also, can you imagine if, like, this is the state that aliens found Earth in? They land like, what the hell is going on here?
Or are they coming to reclaim the JFK documents because they don't want everyone to know?
That's a great point. Holy crap, I hadn't thought about that. What a great point. Aliens killed JFK. And now we have this. It's the aliens coming back to get those redacted documents before they hit the streets.
What if it was like a skin-changing alien that had already killed JFK and just impersonated him, and they were coming to kill him?
Wow. Or maybe it was just a sacrificial... Maybe it was a sacrificial thing, and his head, like, blew up as a farce of some sort. The final scene in the play. Maybe JFK was an alien the whole time. Fascinating. I got distracted by some weird things happening on Twitter. Somebody who I thought was already following me followed me, and then that person tweeted they had a fake account rolling around about them, which is weird. Because I can't tell how this account is different. Apparently, so none of the action from last night warranted a suspension for Ndamukong Suh, who choked Ryan Mallett, or Kiko Alonso, who hit Joe Flacco in the head. Suh wasn't even flagged, but should have been, apparently. Later, he was flagged. Or no, he should have been flagged earlier, excuse me. He was flagged later on. I think twice, actually. But it looks like no one's getting a suspension. I don't think Joe Flacco's assaulter, Kiko Alonso, should have been suspended at all. I don't think he should be fined. A penalty in the moment is fine. That's okay. A penalty in the moment, I'm okay with. Because you're rolling out these ways to try to help guys not hit quarterbacks in the act of sliding. However, you're doing it. You're asking them to do something truly inhuman. If you saw the play from last night, if you saw it in slow motion, you're going to think that Kiko Alonso is a monster. If you only watch it at full speed, you're going to think that he was a missile who could not have his course changed because he's not an asteroid from another solar system. So, it sucked. It sucks that Flacco got concussed and that his helmet flew off and that the Ravens lost their quarterback en route to a 40-0 victory. But I didn't find it to be particularly vicious on a purposeful level. Because what I saw in that video was a simple fact of anatomy and physics. Work with me here. It's not complicated anatomy or physics, but I think that's what makes this true. Whenever a quarterback slides, the safe hit range of a quarterback's midsection, the only place you're allowed to hit a quarterback, that becomes where his head then is. You with me? Quarterback running. You aim for the number 5 on Joe Flacco's chest, and then he starts to slide. All of a sudden, he puts his head where your forearm is as you come through for the tackle, and it gets your head knocked off. It sucks. But Flacco was running for a first down, and he was trying to get those last couple of inches. And Kiko Alonso's entire existence on that field is to stop that from happening. On, I think, 3rd and 10. So he went in to hit him. And then Flacco slid. And he hit him. Sucks! Also, nothing a linebacker running at full speed can do about that. If he would have gotten his arm up higher and he could have just coasted over Flacco, that would have been great. But he didn't. And you're moving in a game that's moving that fast, with guys that big. I think it was Romo that said right after the play on the actual broadcast, said it's just, you've got to, Alonso has to pull up. He's got to be less aggressive, I think was actually the phrase that he used. And I just sort of giggled a little bit. You know what? That NFL football linebacker, he needs to be less aggressive when it comes to tackling the ball carrier.
It's not like, you know, he was a quarterback and has biases
sure.
about that.
Sure. No, and I get that. But that was a prevalent thing on Twitter. Saying, the linebacker, that linebacker has to be less aggressive whenever it comes to tackling the ball carrier. Wow. Also, what happened to all the Marcus Peters people last week? I didn't even think about this. Marcus Peters was fined $9,000 and some change for his hit on Derek Carr on Thursday night. What happened to everybody who said that Peters needed to be a more aggressive tackler? Because he was for that play, and it got him flagged 15 yards.
It was just the wrong play.
That's always how it works, though, isn't it? I cannot tell Kiko Alonso to be a less aggressive linebacker when that's what he's been doing for, 10 years in the league?
or back to college, if not 10 years totally. He's 27, so he's probably been playing football for 10 years. He's younger than I thought he would be.
2013 draft.
So he's been playing football for a decade. At a high enough level to be doing it in the NFL now. That's an aggressive dude. That's a guy who sees a ball carrier running at him and then takes off in the direction at the ball carrier.
Random Kiko Alonso thing. Do you know where he's from?
No.
Massachusetts.
And you bring that up because he's
it was just
also like
surprising.
Cuban, isn't he?
His father was born in Cuba and raised in Puerto Rico.
Got it.
And his mother's from Colombia.
Interesting.
Massachusetts wasn't the place I was expecting.
No, that's kind of strange, but okay.
A little bit.
Cool. So far, by the way, we're doing a good national show because, like, PTI just started on the TVs in front of me, and they're going, McNair, Flacco hit. Next, though, is the World Series, and we're probably gonna zag on them there. We're going to zig when they zag, or vice versa on that one.
But you can listen to the World Series on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And you should. Although it's like a Friday night. Like, if you're like...
I get paid by the listener, so please.
Oh, God. Could you imagine if that was the case? But I had ramen for my breakfast / lunch today anyway. I had a cup of ramen and a soft-boiled egg. I would have to eat like half of a noodle cup every day if this show paid us based off of the number of listeners. ESPN Kansas City would be legally categorized as a sweatshop at that point. If you got paid by the listener. That's funny. But yeah, so it stinks, but it's also just sort of how the NFL operates. Also, this is a very small personal bother. I told you yesterday that I took the Ravens in the game, but I never submitted my picks on ESPN's Picks Can Pick'em thing, which is how I actually keep track of my progress and everything. And I have like a competition with my dad, who I'm guessing took Baltimore last night because they were favored. And I never submitted my pick, and I just so I had to take the L in last night's game. And I remember to double check it like 10 minutes after the game started, and it was too late.
So you're not only losing to him in number of Twitter followers, but you're also losing to him in football picks.
That's true.
Man, that's rough.
It is rough. My dad's more popular than I am, and he's also better at picking football games than I am, apparently. He's not better at fantasy football than me, though. I'm freaking killing it in my fantasy football leagues right now, man. That's the show everybody wants to hear, right? Is me talking about my assorted fantasy football teams.
How's your league, Josh?
It's going great, man. I won all four leagues last week.
Tell me more.
I also won on my fantasy basketball league last week.
Woo!
5-0 in fantasy last week. All right, I talked about my ramen lunch, my fantasy teams. This feels right. This feels like the right progression of what the show was today. Social issue, football issue, ramen, fantasy teams. And actually, we do have a handful of Chiefs things we'll talk about. In fact, Beards, do you have all the audio pulled together? We might go ahead and hit on some of that. We'll talk about the Dayton Moore thing later on in the show. Because there are some Chiefs topics I wanted to touch on today. Derek Johnson and Bob Sutton, among others, talked to the media today. All the coordinators did, but I wanted to hear from Bob Sutton in a few instances because he talks about Steven Nelson's return. He talks about the lack of defensive movement last week, and he talks about the reasoning behind dropping Justin Houston into coverage as often as he does. Let's go ahead and start, Beards, with the lack of defensive movement last week. Because he spent some time here talking about how the defensive line doesn't do much by way of stunting, doesn't do much by way of movement, and it's been sort of a vanilla defensive front for most of the season. Frankly, the amount of movement up in that front seven has been pretty limited, as they tend to rush three and four guys in at a pretty hefty clip. You have that ready to go, Beard? Cool. I realized I didn't give you an order because I didn't have an order in my head before any of this segment started. But this is interesting. So here's Bob Sutton today talking to the media about the lack of, I guess you could say, defensive creativity against the Raiders last week.
I think it's dropbacks last week.
Mm-hmm.
Went back and looked, and you know, like the movement on the defensive line, for the most part, it's every man trying to beat their man.
They're sure.
Stunts. Is there a reason why, you know, you feel like it's just, or in that game you felt better equipped to just go one-on-one, or how do you like the movement in the line trying to get more pressure?
Yeah, I think number one, you know, I mean, traditionally, you know, straight rushing is the fastest way to get to the quarterback, you know, individual matchups and that. So, obviously, you know, we got to win more of those. And, again, winning in those isn't, to me, sack is be awesome, all right? But there's not that many sacks usually in games, okay? So, the most important thing is pressure on the quarterback, which is to, like we say, move him off his spot, get him to either throw it out of rhythm either quicker than he wants or, you know, from a coverage standpoint, you're always saying, hey, if you can make him click, you know, hold it one more click, that's when the pressure gets there. So it's a combination. And games are effective, can be effective, you know, the common twist stunts and that. But, you know, be honest, they take just a little longer. Obviously, because you're going this way instead of that way, you know. So you try to take advantage. We have a couple, you know, really good edge rushers, you know. So we try to let them roll and come off. They got to improve. We got to improve inside because all these things happen at once, you know. Like your inside guys, sometimes if you pressure hard off the edge, the quarterback has to step up. So inside, what you're trying to do sometimes is just, you know, what we call push the pocket. You're trying to push it back so the quarterback can't step up. And even if he steps up, there's really no room to throw. A great example would be the play in there where we stripped the ball and we had the penalty. Didn't count. But that's the same thing that happened to Carr. So when he got – we had great – Justin did a really great job of squeezing, and the Carr had to step up. And right as he was, Bailey was pushing the pocket, actually reached out and flip the ball out, you know. So that's really one of the ways you can rush effectively, and has nothing to do with sacks, because the quarterback has nowhere to go. You know, you can't follow through and that. And that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to make him uncomfortable. Now, there's certain plays, as you guys know, that if he's going to get rid of the ball in 2.0, 2.1, we're not going to affect him very much with a rush. I mean, he's just, the ball's out before, you know, you can really be almost unblocked and not get there at times. So, you know, there's a combination of those things that are happening. But games are a good alternative, a good way to change things up. And, you know, something we probably look at a little bit.
I think there are a lot of interesting things there. Again, that's Bob Sutton talking about sort of the defensive scheming. And started off by responding to a question about why the vanilla attack. And so it touched on a bunch of things. First of all, there's the idea that it's a combination of, and really, he sort of started and ended this clip, I think, with a very similar, making a very similar point, saying that it's a combination of how the secondary is performing and how the pass rush is getting there and all of the elements of the pass rush. And that Sutton admitted there that you're not going to affect David Carr in 2.1 seconds. It's almost impossible to get to a quarterback in 2.1 seconds, which puts some of that blame back on the secondary, which I don't think is an accident by Bob Sutton. I think part of it is trying to give Carr his due, trying to say, well, this is a guy that's getting rid of the ball so quickly that you have no real options here. But I think part of that is saying, hey, listen, what he really means there is we're working on getting Carr or any quarterback to take a little longer in the pocket so we have a chance to get the guys to him. Also, he pointed out, again, but working on the time issue here, that it takes longer to run a little twist or a little stunt on that defensive line. It's often where you get the most effective pressure, but it takes a little while longer. Whenever you're going up against a quarterback gets rid of the ball very quickly, that's difficult. One other thing that he said that I think is interesting, and we'll hear him talk about Justin Houston whenever we come back from a commercial here in a second, but he said, we've got a couple of good edge rushers, so we sort of let them try to go get the quarterback. So they got to be better, interior's got to be better, secondary's got to be better. But it's kind of funny to me to hear him say that they want to let the edge rushers do it whenever, at a pretty hefty clip, Justin Houston is not actually rushing the quarterback. He spends a lot of time in coverage. He spends a lot of time kind of just holding on to his offensive linemen and keeping an eye on the quarterback in case he tries to run off with it. So that also I found to be pretty interesting. We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to hear Bob Sutton talk about his reasoning behind having Justin Houston drop into coverage pretty consistently. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. Also, as always, if you have any questions or comments or impact at all, did I say David Carr?
I wasn't listening.
Charlie on Twitter says, not that Charlie, on Twitter says, Derek Carr, you said David. So if you have any input, any thoughts, any corrections for my terrible dumb boy mistakes,
any insults,
you can,
words of kindness,
you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. You can tweet Beards at Beards McFly. You can comment on the ESPN Kansas City live stream. But yeah, again, but most importantly, this show is about me making mistakes and then you correcting them relentlessly.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
What are you looking at on the TV, Beards? It was so interesting.
The NFL Players Only Show. Their segment is Best 2-Minute Drill You've Ever Been a Part Of.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I think we're better than that.
I mean,
like, it's not...
What do you want from the television?
It's not a race I want to be a part of, but I feel like we're better than that.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Always better than somebody. We're all... Listen, I believe that. I believe pretty firmly that for the rest of my life, the rest of my professional life, I guess we should say specifically for sports conversation shows, because, you know, beyond that, who knows? I'm pretty sure there's always going to be somebody we're better than and somebody we're worse than. That day it was the NFL Players Show. Today it's probably Doug Gottlieb, because DeAndre Hopkins is apparently not smart enough to get the nuance of Bob McNair's inmates quote, according to Doug Gottlieb, who appears to have said that on an FS1 set, and if that is true, then it's all extra perfect. Let's see here. I can't find it. Oh, yeah, Fox Sports Radio. There we go. Perfect. DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, I'm just going to be blunt, he's not smart enough to understand the nuance of what he's saying. All right, man. Okay. Fine. We're all idiots and you're a genius, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we can't live up to you. God, I had somewhere else to go with this that I wanted to touch on. Oh, Beard said today feels like a Monday, and that's sad. I'm sorry. It feels like a Friday to me. It feels like this has been a long week and a good week. And really, I've felt worse about every single day's show than I have about it beforehand than I have after it. I think that's good.
Yesterday was a really good show.
It was. And
especially the second hour.
Right. Well, so that's usually how this works. Is usually the first hour is kind of like has some construct to it. And it's like, all right, here's like the A block and the B block or whatever. And
then everything just goes off the wall.
What was that?
I had to cough. I coughed mid-word. Anyway, everything just kind of goes out the window after that.
Yeah, it was weird. And like the show with Charlie on Wednesday was like that, where I didn't have stuff built in throughout it, and sometimes that negative space brings the most fun stuff. So hopefully that happens in the second hour today. But for now, we do have a construct to work in. We don't have time for Bob Sutton this hour. We have 2 minutes left in this hour.
We can do it at the top of the next hour.
We'll do it at the top of the next hour. At the top of the next hour, we're going to hear from Bob Sutton talking about why he drops Justin Houston into coverage so often, in juxtaposition to what the things we heard him say a few minutes ago about why the defense has been kind of boring in the front seven, frankly, this year. So we'll bring all of that together also. We're going to hear from Derek Johnson, who will also talk about how to create more pressure on the quarterback. He had some interesting perspectives because he's a longtime veteran. He said some good things. Also, Bob Sutton has talked about Steven Nelson's return to the Chiefs and the challenges that he's going to face as he gets back on the field. I've said this for a few days now. I don't know if you can even overstate the impact of Steven Nelson returning. By the way, BJ Kissel tweeted this out. This is the injury report officially for the Chiefs versus the Broncos. They obviously have until Monday to get these guys fully healthy and ready to go, and it's just Friday. But today, Justin Houston was a limited participant both of these last two games in practice with a knee injury. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, limited participant in practice Thursday and Friday with a knee injury. Benny Logan was a full participant both days with a knee injury. Mitch Morse, full participant. Jerkendrick West, full participant. Albert Wilson, full participant. So the only guys here, and now this does not include Steven Nelson. I don't know if Steven Nelson is so good to go that he's not even on the injury report, or if it's because he can't technically be fully active, I think, until Monday, because I think the NFL's official week starts either on Sunday or Monday, in a way that works as a little loophole in favor of the Chiefs when it comes to bringing back Steven Nelson for Monday Night Football. So we might be up in the air a little bit with Nelson still, but the only limited participants of the active guys today was Justin Houston and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Really hope we see both of those guys on Monday night. Whenever we come back, we will hear Bob Sutton about Justin Houston and about Steven Nelson. That's next year on Almost Entirely Sports. That's the name of the show.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I don't know who
he
is.
Oh, this exact story. Got it.
Yeah. No, I didn't know he existed.
I don't expect you that to.
We're going to ask Scott.
What was that? Beard just turned off
too many
microphone
buttons
instead of his own.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You know what this show sounds like without my microphone on it?
Go ahead. Yeah. We're going to talk to Scott later about Lil Yachty.
We are a disruptive force to this.
We are professionals.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Calling us a disruptive force to this company really makes a lot of sense. That all seems very, very true. Tony Dungy says, I know Bob McNair, I know his heart. I don't believe he meant it as viewing players as inmates, but that's how piercing this issue has become. What does he mean by that's how piercing this issue has become? Like, that sounds like he's saying it unfairly? What is this issue, even, by Dungy's standard? That's all weird. Whatever, man. I'm moving to the next thing. We were talking earlier about Bob Sutton and some of his questionable scheming. And one of the things that I've had the biggest issue with Bob Sutton's choices so far this year comes with how he has used Justin Houston. And he was asked about that today out of practice. Here's Bob Sutton talking about why he drops Justin Houston into coverage as often as he does.
Most of it is in the call. So, I mean, there are some plays in base, even we don't know which outside linebacker is going to be in coverage because we don't know the formation. So we might have a call in there, and the chance of Justin rushing is the same as D rushing on the same play. If the formation's this way, well, then Justin's going to be the dropper. If it's this way, D's going to be the dropper. So that part of it, the only one that really, and again, most of our defenses are set up like this. I mean, I think everybody's, if you're determined by the call and then how the formation plays out. So the decision really probably isn't like who's rushing. It's like how many are you going to rush?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then your formation kind of says, okay, this guy's going to go, this guy's going to, because we're a right and left outside linebacker team in general. You know, we move them around some, but we're basically like that. So that's really how it's kind of configured, you know, and how it works out.
So nothing to do with how healthy he is, basically.
No.
That's super interesting. There was the part in there about the chance of Justin rushing is the same as the chance of D rushing, because the thing that actually plays out is determined by the call plus the formation. And that's not good enough. In fact, Brandon Kiley just said on Twitter, Andy Reid is so great at molding his offense around his players, but it seems like Sutton molds his players to his defense. That's exactly what that sound makes me think. Sutton is is basically casting off any idea that he's giving any player a favorable treatment to rush or drop back, whatever, because it's not about the player, it's about what the call is. It's about the call in the formation. Well, the offense in this formation, and then the call is this way, then all of a sudden it's going to slide around, and it's going to be how it plays out. That's not good enough if you have Justin Houston. Come on! That annoys me. I don't like that. You shouldn't treat Justin Houston and Dee Ford the exact same way. There's something that sounds kind of noble in that. There's something that sounds kind of noble in, well, the chance of Justin rushing is exactly the same as the chance of Dee rushing. Or dropping back, or whatever. That sounds good for a second. Wait a second. No, no, no. What if the Broncos said that about whoever's opposite Von Miller, or the Raiders said that about whoever's opposite Khalil Mack, or the Texans said that about J.J. Watt, who I know is, you know, different, mostly got his hand in the ground, but I digress. If you really truly have a playmaker, you've got to fit that guy. You've got a scheme to fit him. And if you want to line up out there and say, all right, well, here's the scheme, here's the call, and no matter what, Justin is rushing, and you have an A and a B version of the play. You say, all right, if the scheme is this way, then Justin's rushing, and you've got you, Steven Nelson, have this coverage. And if it's this way, then Justin's running, and you, Ron Parker, have this guy in coverage. But you can't have everything hinging on, well, the offense gets to determine, essentially. That's what he's saying. The offense determines if we're going to rush Justin Houston or not. That changes how I feel about Bob Sutton as a defensive coordinator. I do not care for that at all. That is not a good way to manage your defense whenever you have playmakers on it. Treating everybody on defense the exact same way is not a winning formula. Let's hear from Derek Johnson here. Derek Johnson also talked about getting more of a pass rush, and I'm curious to see if he thinks that Bob Sutton's philosophy is exactly in line. Maybe this wasn't right next to each other or anything, so I don't expect them to reference each other. But you can sort of just juxtapose these on your own. Here's Derek Johnson talking about how they're going to create more pressure on the quarterback.
Some of the keys are getting better pressure on the quarterback is executing the plays in the back end at times, better coverage at times. Even though sometimes the ball comes out fast, still being relentless on getting to the quarterback. And sometimes it's not all about sacks. It's about getting the quarterback off the spot or getting a hand in his face, making him uncomfortable when he's in the pocket. So, of course, we want, you know, the goal is to get sacks, but at times pressures and causing interceptions and causing the quarterback not to be as comfortable back there is even better.
The team was a little more ball hockey last year as far as like the number of turnovers they were getting per game. Is it? Do you think some of that is the pressure getting to the quarterback? Is that where like maybe those would increase if you can get more pressure? Or where do you think it is as a defense? Or some of that just luck of the draw?
Well, at the end of the day, we just got to play better in general from being closer on our coverage, still rushing the passer at a good rate, even though the ball comes out fast. But it's all, at the end of the day, myself included, just playing better ball defensively. It's almost mid-season, so you want to peak at the right time, and we have confidence in our defense that we left some things out there on the table that hurt us the last few games. Just getting better, man, getting better. I mean, we're 5-2, so it's a good opportunity for us to get better and win at the same time. That's what you want to do.
Here's Derek Johnson talking about it. He's mostly saying we got to play better. And they did have a bunch of execution errors last Thursday that they have to do. They do have to get better at. But I'm still sort of baffled by the Bob Sutton thing. Justin Houston is a destructive force defensively. And the idea that everything is determined by the call and the formation is letting the opposing offense determine for you what's about to happen. I hate that. Also, we have one more piece of sound here. One more Bob Sutton, and then I'll go back to doing the talking myself. But Bob Sutton talked about Steven Nelson's return, and I thought this is worthwhile because it sounds like Nelson is on his way back. He talks about Steven Nelson here and the challenges that he's going to face as he returns to the Chiefs midseason.
Well, I think it's just you get back to the same thing. You know, I think they've got a pretty good handle on his physical situation, and you know, looks pretty good. Now it's really more about reaction and, you know, his comfort in getting back and seeing things and that. So that's probably always the hardest thing to judge because you're still not seeing quite the speed you're going to see it on game day. But, you know, I think so far, you know, he's done a really good job, you know, in the time he's been out there. And, you know, he's got those fresh legs, you know, from being out. So, you know, he's moving around pretty good. So it's just going to be, I think, you know, that next couple days watching him and saying, okay, I think he's in the groove and ready to go. I mean, he knows the system. It isn't like he's learning the system or something. So I think he's, you know, he's showing some real positive signs here. We just got to wait and see.
I'm really excited about Steven Nelson getting back to this defense. I'm not excited in the level that I would be excited to see a guy who I think is really a transformational playmaker back in the league, back in the system. But I am really glad that he is going to be a part of this defense again, hopefully come Monday. Because, again, he's replacing one of the biggest weaknesses in this defense right now in the form of Philip Gaines. So I really hope we see him out there on Monday, and it seems like we probably will at this point. I would think we'll probably see Morse, LDT, and Steven Nelson all returning all at once. And not a moment too soon for any of them. The actual game on Monday night, we can do a little look ahead to. We'll probably have a bunch more breakdown of this come Monday. Actually getting ready for the game. It feels like for the third consecutive week, a matchup that the Chiefs have all the advantages in. In the last 2 weeks, didn't work out so well with that line of thinking. So maybe I should be a little more concerned than I am. But I look at the recent history of the Broncos, an offense that's been really, truly awful for the last 3 weeks. They beat the Raiders 16-10, and then 2 weeks ago, they scored 10 points. Last week, they put up an egg against the Chargers. I feel like this is an offense that's going to come to Arrowhead and put up less than 17, which is actually something that they have done every week after week two. They put up 42 on the Cowboys in a game that makes literally no sense. But on the road to the Bills, they put up 16. At home versus the Raiders, they put up 16. At home against the Giants, they put up 10. At the Chargers last week, they put up 0. I would take the under on that 17-point benchmark at this point, I think. Not because I'm supremely confident in the Chiefs defensively. I know that there are the reasons that there are plenty of decent reasons for you to be concerned. But Trevor Siemian does not worry me. Tyreek Hill versus Demaryius Thomas are the leading rushers on these two teams. I think of Demaryius Thomas as a really legit number one wide receiver. He fits all of the puzzle pieces that you would want to put in there for a number one receiver. He has 30 receptions for 389 yards this year. Tyreek Hill has 36 for 515 and 3 touchdowns. C.J. Anderson is the leading rusher on this team, 92 carries for 391 yards. Again, just for kicks, Kareem Hunt, 124 for 717. The Chiefs have so many advantages here. They have all of the offensive advantages. The Chiefs' offense is 1,000 miles ahead of where the Broncos' offense is. So I think this is a matchup that I feel pretty solid about because the Chiefs defense doesn't have to be great here. They just have to be decent. A decent performance from a Chiefs offense against from the Chiefs defense against a bad offense puts the pressure on back on the Chiefs offense, and I think that's the better place for the pressure to be right now. It's weird because that hasn't been true for a good portion of this Chiefs recent history. But with all the weapons that the Chiefs have right now, I feel better about the offense being put in a pressured situation than the defense, even though I think the defense is going to take a observable step forward whenever Steven Nelson is back. I really do think it's going to matter that much. Because where do you pick on a guy? Who do you pick on whenever Nelson is out there? Do you pick on Nelson? Fine by me. Test him. Pick on Terrence Mitchell. He's been pretty good whenever he's been tested this year. He's been tested constantly. He's pulled out of that pretty well. The Broncos' defense is obviously the scary part. You're afraid of Von Miller ruining Alex Smith's life. I get it. But the Chiefs have too many weapons. I'm probably not going to love how the Chiefs move offensively on Monday night, if I had to guess, because whenever Alex Smith and Andy Reid get under the impression that they're going to have a bunch of pressure whirling around Alex Smith, they tend to make everything shorter and quicker, and that is not a whole lot of fun for me as someone who is a fan of the more reckless offensive game. But it's going to work just fine here because if you have to have a quick release to avoid getting crushed by Von Miller, you quickly get it to Tyreek Hill along the sidelines, hopefully running in a straight line in a way that you can just launch it up and hope it times out. Or you get something quick across Travis Kelce, across the middle. Or you get something quick to Kareem Hunt running a little wheel route out of the backfield. Or get something quick to DeMarcus Robinson, who has been everywhere these last 2 weeks. This Chiefs offense, I think this is the kindest thing I can say about the Chiefs offense, truly. I think they can win in a bunch of different ways. And that is so valuable. I think they can win against really good corners because they're going to be dealing with that against the Broncos. Aqib Talib and Chris Harris. They can win against good pass rushes. They're going to have that coming at them with Von Miller. And they can win against teams that are really good against the tight end. Not necessarily Broncos case. I'm just saying, even really good defenses are always going to have a weakness somewhere. And the Chiefs have strengths in a lot of places right now. It's kind of bonkers, but I actually currently feel better about the Chiefs' number two receiver spot than I did when Chris Conley was healthy. Just because we've seen some really explosive things from DeMarcus Robinson. And I'm as infatuated by explosiveness as I am anything in the NFL. So I feel like DeMarcus Robinson can be explosive out here. I'm excited for that. So even if, though, if he gets the demanded coverage of Aqib Talib or Chris Harris while the other one is on Tyreek Hill, first of all, Tyreek Hill is faster than both of those guys. But beyond that, who's going to keep up with Kareem Hunt, either on the ground or through the air? Who's going to cover Travis Kelce? You're going to give maybe some help to a linebacker, some safety help to a linebacker trying to deal with Travis Kelce? Good luck one-on-one with DeMarcus Robinson and Tyreek Hill. Two very quick, very explosive, very crisp route runners. The Chiefs have a lot of weapons, which is why this all ultimately ends up all coming down to Alex Smith offensively. Because he has a lot of options around him. And so far, he's used them very efficiently and very effectively. A couple great games, one really bad game, some really good games in like one or two kind of meh game. But it's been really good for the most part. I think the scheme in this game is what it is every week for the Chiefs. Get the ball to your playmakers. Do it whatever way makes it the easiest for Alex Smith, makes it the hardest for the Broncos to keep up with. And I think if the Chiefs do that, they should win this game by 14. Give me, what, 31-17, something like that? That's right. That's how I feel currently. Beards is exasperatedly looking at his computer. I feel a technological problem
coming.
Your PC
ran into a problem and needs to restart.
Really? You almost died trying to...
Yeah, that was weird.
...spread that out there.
Interesting.
Bye, Facebook.
So the stream's down. I'll get it back up as soon as my computer decides to restart.
I'm just wondering, did it sort of just peacefully die here? Did it sort of peace out?
I think it's the Windows 10 blue screen of death. It has like a QR code and a sad face emoji.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this will be fun.
That sounds terrible. Are you okay, by the way? You've been coughing a lot
today. I know,
today.
It's weird. I don't know.
Are you? Do you have...
I think I'm fine.
Do you have an alien living in your lungs?
Man, I hope not.
Because it seems like you might. You were up here at the station until like 1 o'clock last night running Sporting.
Yeah.
Sporting loss, and that's sad. And you, so you were here really late.
The more sad part was the fact that the game took 30 minutes longer than it should have.
And so you went home in Lawrence. What time did you get home last night?
2.
You get home at 2, you get back here at 2 today, right? About then?
Yeah.
And you said today feels like a Monday. You just sort of seem kind of sick and sad.
No, I don't think I'm sick.
You seem sick and sad.
Okay.
A quick dive over into the Facebook comments as the stream breathes its last. Eddie, I think, was saying that I did say David Carr. Good on me. And also, Eddie points out, comparing Denver to the Kansas City injury reports, things are really looking better. This may be meaningless just because of a small sample size. There's a blinding flash of the obvious, but during this season, the Chiefs are unbeaten when the ratio of the opponents, the number of injured players, KC to the opponent, is less than 1-1. That's really interesting. So the really good news, though, is that KC seems to be managing injuries in a much better fashion. The number of players the Chiefs have in the fully practiced category is very good in terms of the percentage of their opponents. And that is interesting. Whenever Mitch Morse went down, whenever LDT went down, we all kind of went like, well, bleep it. They're gone. It's over. So the Chiefs have actually, with the obvious exception of Eric Berry, had pretty good luck with the injuries this year, simply because if that LDT injury was long-term, if that was a season ender, as it feels like is often the case whenever you see a lineman get dropped on funny, then we feel generally a whole lot worse about what we're seeing right now. The Chiefs appear to be in relatively good shape. So that is exciting. I think I had more Broncos and Chiefs to talk about, but then I just saw Beards get so upset. And
it wouldn't be this week unless there were more technical difficulties.
This has been the most technically challenging week of this show's existence. Fair?
Beyond fair.
Like, it's a blowout.
Runaway.
Runaway.
Unanimous MVP.
The unanimous worst technical week in the history of this show. Not even Beards' fault. Oh, and I will tell you whenever it's Beards' fault.
Thank you.
Usually if the show, like,
I need that clarification.
Oh, for sure. If the show stream, if the Facebook live stream, like, gets started late, it's usually Beards' fault. This is the robots revolting. All right, we're going to take a break and see if we can pull ourselves back. What is that confused face for, Beards?
The webcams, my computer restarted, I reloaded OBS. The webcams are giving me like a old TV snow look. Like the staticky.
I'm coming to look.
This is interesting.
I'm coming to look. Hold on.
Oh, are we doing this still on the air? Is that okay? Oh, are we going to break? Yeah, see, look at this.
Oh, no!
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
If this show is ever, like, I was going to say, like, national, I should have said relevant, I will start a campaign to get you to legally change your name.
Baby steps.
Baby steps, for sure.
With Joshua Briscoe.
First, we have to get paid.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the technically working Almost Entirely Sports. Technically on air. Technically on air Almost Entirely Sports. Just, we could. Here's what we need to do, Beards. We need to figure out a way to stream you trying to get the stream set up. And maybe I just hold my phone up from over here and just broadcast you live with my phone. Are we going to listen to this whole song? It's a really good song. It's usually long. You don't usually play the music that long. I don't mind it. It just was weird. Beards is spinning a lot of plates. But I think streaming that would be the pinnacle of this whole show. Because the show of just simply watching you try to... Like, right now, I don't know if you can see this whenever I have the stream up or not. Beards on his back has two fire extinguishers that he's wearing, like a jetpack. And then he has, obviously, both of, like, the handles or whatever up on his shoulders. So at any given point, he can just reach over, pull it across, and just... into one of the electrical fires that one of the computers has started. And he's wearing like a bandana right now. It looks like he has coal all over his face for some reason. Like
I've
he
got
works.
A welding mask.
A welding mask is good. You got coal all over his face as if he's been working on in the. He looks like that guy from Polar Express with a big old beard. That's what Beards actually looks like if you haven't seen him before. It's kind of amazing. So it's just, I think people watching that, people watching the welding mask come down and the fire extinguishers get whipped out and the plates spinning behind you, you have to keep rolling or else you get killed by the spike trap underneath you. Because if any of the plates that are spinning hit the ground before 60000, then it hits a lever that opens up the trap door underneath Beards, and then he falls into the spike pit. My NFL picks have not been great this year. I'm well above average, but I took the L last night because I didn't submit my pick for the Ravens, even though I told you that I was going to do that. I didn't. This is kind of an interesting week of games because most of the early games seem to be relatively lopsided, and then it gets more interesting in the afternoon. So here's just a quick rundown of your menu of games this week. Vikings and Browns get exported out to London, and frankly, thank God, we don't need that here. It's just not... Oh, Beards is fist pumping.
We're back.
We're back on. Welcome back, Facebook Live. If you're just out seeing this, it's because Beards' computer tried to consume itself. But we're back. Good work, Beards. The first game of the day is exported out to London because we have enough problems in America already. So Vikings at Browns in London will kick off at 9:30 a.m. Oh, no, it did it again. We're back off Facebook, I'm assuming. That's very bad. All right, we're going to take the L for today, the rest of today.
Okay, we'll just take the L for the rest of the week, month, decade.
It really is definitely the blue screen of death for Windows 10. That is definitely what it looks like.
Oof.
Is your computer like under warranty?
It's never done that.
Yeah, that's not great. How long have you had that computer?
Like 2 years? Maybe three?
You and your coughs, man.
I know.
You and your computer both have a virus. All right, we're taking the L on Facebook today. That's okay from here on out. We gave him a good hour and a half or so. All right, I've already made my joke about exporting Vikings and Browns. The Vikings should win that game by a lot. They're starting Case Keenum because Sam Bradford is still out with his mysterious injury that they never really figured out, and Teddy Bridgewater's not back yet. Falcons at Jets. That's going to be the game that is inexplicably won by the Jets that drives me completely freaking bonkers because they already have 3 wins and I was very confident in the under on 4.5. I'm taking the Falcons on the road at the Jets, but the Jets are going to win and I'm going to be furious. Raiders at Bills is going to be very interesting from the Chiefs' perspective because the Raiders are trying to get back up to 500, but they have to do it on the road at Buffalo. A Bills team that is 4-2 but doesn't seem like they should be for any reason whatsoever. Tyrod Taylor's been playing pretty well with only LeSean McCoy around him. I don't even know if I could name you any other weapons on that offense. but I'm going to take the Bills because they're at home, a couple of evenly matched teams. If the Raiders play like they did on Thursday night, they'll win in Buffalo, but I'm betting that they won't. Bears at Saints. The Bears are gross. I think their defense outscored their offense by a couple of touchdowns last week. It's a mess in Chicago, even though they're almost, again, trying to get back to 500, because everybody in this league is trying to get back to 500. But I'll take the Saints at home. I'm also, though, not thoroughly buying into the Saints as a long-term contender. I know they're 4-2. I know that they've looked better as of late. I know that they beat the Packers last week with Brett Hundley. I want to add, and I know there's an N in his name, so sometimes instead of calling him Brett Hundley, I'll call him Brent Hudley, and that's just not right. So I know the Saints started 0-2 and have won their last four, and I'm not ready to jump on that train yet. I'll need to see it a few more times against some real opponents, but it's not going to happen this week against the Bears because they're not a real opponent. The Colts go to Cincinnati in the battle of a couple of two-win teams. I can only pray that God has had mercy on us in the Midwest, and that's not like our CBS game or anything. That would be devastating, and I would probably go just like listen to a podcast or something and watch anything else. Pray to God that's not on here locally, because that game is a dumpster fire. But I think the Bengals will win that dumpster fire in particular. Chargers at Patriots. The Patriots looked as good as they've looked defensively all year last week. The Chargers are looking like an actual football team again. They're looking more like the team I expected them to be. But even the team that I expected them to be would lose at New England. I would be rooting for the Chargers in this game. Officially now the streakiest team in football, I'm pretty sure. 4 losses, 3 wins all in a row. I would love to see the Chargers go into New England and hand the Patriots their third home loss of the year, I believe. Not going to bet on it, though. I feel like New England probably takes that one by a decent margin. Niners at Eagles is going to be disgusting. What is the spread in that game? The Niners haven't won a game yet, and the Eagles have only lost one. On ESPN.com, they have the Eagles by 12.5. This feels like Kansas TCU to me. I would take the Eagles by much more than that. Panthers at Buccaneers is one of the actually relatively rare road favorites. You have the Falcons at the Jets as a true road game, and the Panthers at the Buccaneers. I think Carolina wins on the road here. The Buccaneers probably playing this game without Jameis Winston, I believe.
Do you want the Eagles-Niners spread?
Yeah, what is it? Where do you see it from?
It's from the score, and it is Eagles minus 12.5.
All right, that's what it said on ESPN also. So, yeah, I would happily give those points. Is Winston hurt? I thought Jameis Winston was hurt. He was practicing this week, though, so maybe he's good. It doesn't really matter to
Questionable,
me.
Questionable right shoulder.
Okay. Doesn't matter either way. I don't think the Buccaneers win that game. I think the Panthers handle them. But that'll be an interesting game if it is Cam versus Jameis. That's kind of fun. Texans at Seahawks. The Seahawks are going to win. And the Texans, though, the beginning of that game will be the most interesting thing in football. Also, only 2 afternoon games. That's bizarre. You've got Houston at Seattle and then Dallas at Washington. The competitive games I was seeing late down the line here were literally the 2 late games, and then Sunday and Monday Night Football are all interesting. But that is, only 2 afternoon games. That's no fun. Anyway, I think the Seahawks handle business at home against the Texans. I think the Cowboys win on the road at Washington, but I am right on the fence with that one. I actually expected that to be an upset pick, and it's not. 68% of people on ESPN's Pigskin Pick'em have taken the Cowboys. I'm going to do that also, but I'm a little bit surprised as to that spread there. The Cowboys' offense looked really, really good the last couple of weeks, so I feel like they're back fully clicking. I'll take Dallas there. Then on Sunday Night Football, though, I will take the upset. The upset is the home team. Listen, I know that I should know better about the Pittsburgh Steelers and my doubts of them, but I don't buy them on the road very often. Again, I know I'm an idiot. I know on the road they beat the Chiefs. I know I suck. I know I'm a dope. But it seems like Golden Tate is going to play on Sunday night. That is a huge deal. If Golden Tate ends up not being active, I probably flip back to Pittsburgh before that game kicks off. But as of right now, I'm going to go ahead and take the upset on that one, have the Lions at home over the Steelers, and then, of course, the Chiefs at home on Monday night against the Denver Broncos. I've already lost the one game this week, so really, what do I have to lose other than... Last week was good, actually. Last week, I got 12 of those games right, but that was my best week by an incredible margin. Was any of that interesting? I'm not sure if any of that was interesting. Just a little NFL whip around. If you weren't sure what games were on the slate this week, now you know.